We'll do it live!
You are listening to the AMC Report with your host, Ryan Nelson.
This is Ry, you're listening to the ANC Report. My guest today is Scott Ricard. We're going to be talking about Libya mostly. There's a lot of things I also threw in the cutting room floor. Those are out there on the interwebs. Donors got the portion on JFK. Everyone else can get the cutting room floor stuff soon on YouTube or ANC Report. We're jumping right into the middle of a conversation here talking about Ukraine and Syria. The majority of the podcast will be about Libya timeline, because Libya is something that has been forgotten about. It was 3 years ago, horrible attack. The country's in total disarray right now, thugs running everything. Standard of living has dropped tremendously. It's chaotic and no one's talking about it. A bit like Netanyahu taking the largest chunk of the West Bank while all the attention has been on ISIS. So I'm trying to give some attention to those things that didn't get enough attention, and Libya is certainly that topic, and Mr. Ricard is an expert on Libya, so do enjoy.
A mercenary force that you
put
together?
Yesterday, how's Syria a threat to the United States again? It's been on and on, and never did get an answer. Like, 'cause it's not.
I mean, it's and what's funny is, like, these guys like Greenwald and all these guys are jumping on the bandwagon now. But if you go back to Libya and try to bring up points in Libya, oh, that's in the past. Dude, it's only 3 years ago.
No, let's talk about Libya some, because you're an expert on Libya. So what I'd like to do is a little before and after, because I don't think people understand what a powerhouse in Africa Libya was, the quality of life people had under Gaddafi. Gaddafi's a new Hitler, just like Putin, Saddam, Assad, Ahmadinejad, whoever they don't like is always Hitler. But the quality of life in Libya before versus now.
Well, I think whenever I tell the story about Libya, I think it's really important to go back to the early 1900s, you know, because that's prior to Sykes-Picot. It tells a little story about, you know, what happened to this under the, you know, the concentration camps that the Americans and the Italians and the kinds of things that obviously they only accused the Germans of doing, where they rounded up people and put them in, prisons. Or open air prisons where they're trying to control individuals.
They have those now in Israel.
Yeah, they call it Gaza. Exactly. Yeah, and for Africans.
Well, Gaza is a prison basically, and then they have the African migrant prisons. But like, well, yeah, you can leave, but you have to come back by night.
Right. So the same thing, even worse, was going on in Libya in the early 1900s. You know, post World War One, obviously they couldn't act on the agreement that they had done with the Balfour Agreement, and the Italians were actually volunteering to help police Libya, and you know, neither the French or the British were in a position to where they could do much because they've been devastated by the war. So they allowed the Italians to go in, and at the time Libya was only about 500,000 or 600,000 population. And the Italians went in within a year or two at the most. They went in and they murdered almost 10% of the population. So 50,000 to 60,000 people were put in quote unquote concentration camps where they were starved to death, right? And there was an example for the other 90% that they left alone. And then that same year or two, over 150,000, that's 150,000 Italians migrated to Libya. So you went from, let's just say, 450,000 remaining to 600,000 total, where one in four was an Italian in 1 or 2 years. Now imagine any other country having to deal with that kind of dominating, infiltration, other than Palestine. But let's just say that's what these guys went
through. Miami. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Miami. Well, they had the right drug traders in there for their Colombian imports coming out of South America. So the CIA kind of liked that for a while.
Well, also, a lot of prescription drugs were illegal there. They had doctors giving Oxycontin to everybody.
Oh, most recently, for sure.
Yeah. In modern times, yeah.
We went from cocaine, heroin to Oxycontin in a matter of 20 years here. So it's still the most drug-infected state in the Union. So, but getting back to Libya, when you're in Libya, And in the early 1900s, there was one guy, Mohammed Mukhtar. They called him the Lion of the Desert. And actually, Anthony Quinn did a movie called Lion of the Desert. It is awesome. It goes into the invasion by the Italians and the occupation. And it took him almost 30 years to take down Mukhtar. He was basically a rebel in the desert for several decades. Well, obviously, World War II broke out. The Germans helped, the Italians helped the Germans occupy North Africa pretty easily with their ports in Libya. And Mussolini had done his dirty work alongside. And the Americans got lucky with George Patton the second time around, because the first attack by Eisenhower was a failure. And they defeated Rommel in the desert. Well, after that, it came under military control by the Americans and the Brits. So the Americans and the Brits dominated Libya since the 50s, the late 40s, early 50s. So, and in 1953, they put a guy in place called King Idris. Now, King Idris made the Shah and Saddam and all these guys look like choir boys. He was a despotic bastard. And then they discovered oil in 1959 in Benghazi. And what's important about Benghazi is Benghazi had most of the water supply and had all the petroleum supply, and was only about 10% of the society, whereby most of the other society was out near Tripoli and in tribes, all in and around Tripoli. So you had 10% of the people who had control of the most lucrative asset. We were in the desert. Water is very lucrative. Obviously, the petroleum business was huge. I mean, they were supplying at the time, a large amount of fuel to Europe. And it was very close to
some
Europe.
80% through Italy.
And a lot through Italy because the Italians.
Because of their old ties, yeah.
World ties. So you have a huge amount of people in Libya. And now here's a 25-year-old boy, a military officer. That's all Gaddafi was. And he goes to Greece to because the Libyans and the Americans and the British were very closely tied. And NATO had been just brought into – or excuse me, NATO had just brought Greece and Turkey in the same time that they were setting up puppets throughout the Middle East and Libya. And so here's a young boy in 1965 at 25 years old that goes to Greece and studies. This is what Gaddafi did. He went and studied military tactics alongside the British and the Americans who were occupying Greece at the same time. They were basically offing any politicians that were anti-NATO. I don't know if you know the story I'm not going to remember his name, but they I think the movie was called Z, and the guy's Lambrakis. He was Senator Lambrakis. He was a minister of parliament, a very popular one that was trying to get NATO out in the early 60s. And he came to the demise of a baseball bat to the head while he was out campaigning for what he was trying to accomplish by the junta, the military dictatorship that we had in place. So yeah, that's one of the stories that goes alongside what the Americans were doing in Libya as well, because in Libya we had built the largest Air Force base in the history of the United States Air Force. It's called Wheelis, or was called Wheelis. It's still today, it is the largest Air Force base that the Americans had ever built. So we had a huge Air Force base there. And we had officers in the Libyan army that were traveling to learn from us and then come back. Well, at 27 years old in 1969, 2 years after the Americans and these illegal activities with Israel had cooperated in the overthrow of their neighbor, Gamal Abdel Nasser, and destroyed his military, he looked at his friends and said, look, we're in trouble here. These are not our friends. And he said, and by the way, King Idris is out of the country getting some heart surgery, and there's only about 100 guys we need to arrest. Who's with me? And that's all he did. He went and arrested 100 guys, put 100 guys in prison, and that was it. He took it over, bloodless coup in 1969. Nixon got a call from his MI6 and CIA buddies, and Nixon's like, well, they're not communist and they're not fascist. I say leave them alone. So if it wasn't for Nixon, he would have been easily unseated because they would have sent in the same crew that they sent in 2011. But it would have been, you know, what, 42 years earlier. And so for 42 years, it was like a festering boil, you know, for these guys that had lost, you know, a huge oil asset and a colony that they completely controlled the assets in.
Plus they killed Doc in Back to the Future.
No, oh, jeez. That's
the Libyans. 1980s propaganda.
What's the name of that video out there? Arab Wars? It basically shows how modern. I watched one last night.
The Real Arabs. I don't know if this is the same one you're talking about, but The Real Arabs is a good one about propaganda from Hollywood. Real as in R-E-E-L.
There was one I watched last night. It was Three Times to Kill or something like that, or 3 days to kill. 3 days to kill is what it was called. It was a story that had some German guy was selling nuclear dirty bombs to Syrians. And that came out in 2013. Oh, the dirty bomb to the Syrians, just in time. So, you know, that, and it only fits in a briefcase.
From an evil German, of course.
From an evil German, yeah. Those damn Germans selling dirty bombs to Arabs. So, yeah, they're just perpetuating the propaganda is what they're doing.
Talking about the concentration camps, Eisenhower's death camps, that's something that
sure.
Light shined on that too. But I don't want to get into that. Yeah, I want to stick with Libya because it's my fault to talk about Doc and all. I was trying relief in a very serious topic. But so Gaddafi has these
Gaddafi takes
guys
it
out,
over.
Takes power. Nixon leaves him alone.
Nixon gave him a pass, man. He gave him a free pass.
Yeah, Nixon was dealing with a little bit at home too.
Yeah, 1969. He was a little bit in trouble. But you know, he was the kind of president that really hated Washington D.C. He got sick of these guys, you know, and he knew how dangerous they were. In fact, out of the 365,
you ever hear him talking about Bohemian Grove?
Yeah, but in
faggotiest bunch of hooligans.
But in the 60s, before, you know, when he was president, he would spend more than 2/3 of his time down in Biscayne Bay. He hated being in Washington, D.C., so he was one of the only absent, presidents that we've had, you know, unless you include D.C. Metro golf courses for Obama. But from flying down to Miami on a regular basis, spending 2/3 of the year down in Biscayne Bay, that's unheard of for a president. You know, we even had a president like that other than maybe Johnson and his Texas ranch or Bush.
Hey, Bush's uncle got his golf courses from Inagawa Kai mobs in Japan.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah. Jesus. God. So lives. Here's Gaddafi. He's taken over some oil assets. He's nationalized the oil. He's gone. They dupe him into a couple of wars down in the south against the French Foreign Legion in Chad over a mountain range where there was supposedly some kind of a nuclear uranium type asset in there. He was never allowed to take it. They called them the Toyota Wars. If you look at Wikipedia and the Toyota Wars, it's basically the same Toyota Wars. And I think you mentioned it or somebody else mentioned it, that, you know, these Toyota guys have been in cahoots, you know, with the Americans on their supply lines for these. Was it you? It was awesome because it was another
good. All the Iraqi guys have Nissan.
Really?
Yeah, it's like, well, hilarious. I mean, they're not going to buy an American car after they've starved them and all everything. You know, like, if you're really going to go to war and do something serious, then you're probably going to get a car from Asia because you need it to work.
Well, one of the pictures I posted was from 19, I think it was 86 or 85, in the mid-80s, where these Chad rebels, where by far they were basically French Foreign Legion, which is, let's just call them the 1980s ISIS or the 1980s Al-Qaeda, you know, although they already had them, they called them Mujahideen in Afghanistan. Yeah. But
I was going to say the 80s Al-Qaeda is Mujahideen. I have a rug, an intelligence I'll just say person gave it, her son was in my jiu-jitsu class. Anyway, I ended up with the rug and it's got AK-47 on it and grenades and all that. It's pretty awesome. I got it as a gift. She got it as a gift from them and then I got it as a gift from her.
Interesting. So it was like a handmade rug, you know.
Yeah, handmade. And it's got, this is when they were freedom fighters though. And yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, so here he is, you know, fighting off, you know, his form of al-Qaeda, which, by the way, they were very busy in, you know, getting started in Chechnya, obviously very busy in Iraq at the time, and very busy, you know, with the Iran-Iraq war, and very busy in Afghanistan. All these Toyota wars, you know, that we're seeing repeated again in Syria and Iraq were going on between Chad and Libya. So, you know, they weren't big wars. I mean, these were, you know, thousands of troops going at each other left and right in disputed territory in the south of Libya. And that's pretty much all that Gaddafi was doing. You know, supposedly he was training terrorists at one point, but he was probably just had, you know, camps to train people to fight these, you know, these fanatics that he had to deal with that were being propped up by the French, the British, and the Americans on the southern borders of his country. And certainly he had seen what that happened to Gamal Abdel Nasser.
I mean, how is it not terrorism when the CIA trains people to assassinate people and stuff? You know what I mean? Every government has a terrorist organization. They just call them intelligence agencies.
Right. So yeah, in the end, he'd seen what happened to Nasser and Sadat in Egypt. So, you know, this guy was right to be paranoid. He was crazy. Don't get me wrong. But if put myself in his position at a 27-year-old boy that overthrows a government and then lasts for 41 years or 42 years. So, and in those 42 years, he not only builds the most powerful nation in the history of Africa, he puts the IMF out of business in Africa. IMF is twice the size of North America, or at least a size and a half of the entire North America, more than twice the size of the United States. And so there's no loans coming out of the Paris Club or coming out of, you know, the IMF or World Bank into Africa, because anybody that wants a loan, they go to Gaddafi. Gaddafi will give you an interest-free loan. And his only thing was, if you take a loan from me, just throw some business my way, you know, and pay me back. You know, and that was pretty much his game. And he had a $90 billion African not monetary fund. The African Monetary Fund, you know, obviously disappeared. It was in Arab Bank Corp. He was the majority holder of Arab Bank Corp, which, by the way, was also co-owned by the cohorts in crime in the Syria action and in his overthrow. That would have been the Qataris, the United Arab Emirates, the Saudis. They were also in Arab Bank Corp.
Original guns in the Syrian conflict, too, were the surplus weapons out of Libya that were showing up in Syria.
Absolutely. Well, I wouldn't call them surplus. The guys in Libya were a little upset that the weapons that they were promised and the kind of support they were promised was being sent out of the country, because they're like, hey, those are our warehouses. And so they got a little angry with their CIA counterparts in Benghazi when Chris Stevens came to town to have an argument with the Turkish arms dealers we were dealing with. And they decided to murder Chris Stevens and cover it up and say, did you see that crazy video that came out of LA?
Yeah. Do you know how stupid that was? Because they'd already attempted to kill him in a hotel. They tried to bomb him when he was in there before the video came out. And then there was another attempt. They finally got him in the third one. And still on TV, I covered all this. Who was I talking with? Karen? It's on ANC Report. But anyway, I covered all this.
Karen Kitowski?
It might have been who yeah, she was around that time we were talking about. Yeah, it was. I think, it was her and then Jason Dietz day. Anyway, she still knows about it, too. She'll tell you the same thing. Or it's in the archives. But I can't remember if that was with Boiling Frogs or Moan Network. But I remember doing the whole thing. But anyway, we talked about Benghazi. And, how they had tried to kill him already. There's an attempt on his life, because he had to move his office into a hotel beforehand, and they bombed that. And so there's no way the video was responsible. Like, you knew that anyway, but this is just total overkill evidence that, look, if they were already kill him,
they couldn't say. They couldn't say, they couldn't say, oh, hey, by the way, this guy who's been working with Bernard-Henri Lévy, you know, the huge Zionist imperialist out of France, who's been responsible for, you know, pretty much every major war that the French have been involved with throughout Africa and the Middle East. Oh, by the way, that's been the best friend of our quote-unquote ambassador for a year or so as we were, you know, propping up this fake war against Gaddafi. Because by no means was that enough a popular uprising. Remember, I said that Benghazi was only 10% of the population.
It was pre-crime. They're about, he's about to slaughter people. We got to get him. He's about to do something.
So here's, let's just say at the time, Libya was about 6 million population, which only had about 12,000 people in prison, by the way. So it wasn't a heavily, like, hard-fisted. And none of those
people. Contrast that to, say, Tennessee.
It's, or Saudi Arabia.
Which has 6 million people, though. Yeah, or Saudi Arabia.
Saudi Arabia has 30,000 political dissidents. They haven't even committed a crime. They just speak out against the government. 30,000. You know, and some of those will lose their lives for it. They'll be beheaded because they said such terrible things. Oh, my God, they said terrible things. Well, chop off their heads. So you know, Gaddafi was doing none of this. I mean, he had town councils. You know, water was being provided. Food was being provided. Free bread. You want to start a farm, it was subsidized. You want to buy a car. You buy a $30,000 American car in Libya, he would subsidize it, pay 75%. You would only pay $7,500 for that car. You know, you wanted gas. Gas was like a you know, 20 cents a liter. So, you know, under, what, 80 cents a gallon. So, you know, that country was
free
incredible.
Education.
Free education, free medical, you know,
free
25%.
Medical. That's free, huge.
Yeah, free. And unemployment was 25%. I'll grant that's pretty high. But the fact is that you didn't need a job. He also provided money to you as a subsidy because they were making so much money out of the oil industry. So he was sharing the wealth of the oil assets with the small population.
Sure, this is the U.S. unemployment rate's the same thing. They just screw around with the numbers of what counts as unemployment.
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree with that. And it's so much harder to prove here because, you know, the country is it is a lot less sophisticated than Libya was. I mean, Libya had
shows on that too about how they lie about the numbers. But anyway, continuing with Libya, so you have free
education.
Libya
was the most sophisticated country ever built on the continent of Africa. Had a better aqueduct system than the Romans could ever have imagined. You know, this was a tremendously well developed country that was about ready to become the next Dubai. By the way. AECOM had won a $50 billion contract. Now, this is a $4 billion company, maybe $3 billion company, that had just doubled their revenue in 1 year off of one contract, because it was a 12-year contract of $50 billion. And they were, I think, 2 or 3 years into that contract. And the contract was basically to take the entire coast of Libya and turn it into a Dubai-type infrastructure, all new electric, all new water, all new plumbing, all new swimming pools, movie stars, you name it. It was going to be the next greatest place in the history of Africa.
Without using Indian slaves to do it, though.
No, they used Chinese slaves, unfortunately. The AECOM won the contract.
I just want to point this out. Like, we're not saying good versus evil. We're just saying bad versus worse. But yeah.
No, but I mean, he was going to pay for it with the oil assets, but he was going to turn that country into probably one of the best icons in the history of the world of oil empire that actually took care of its people rather than subjugating its people and turn it like they do in Bahrain or like they do in they don't really do it in Qatar because the population is so small. Everybody flourishes there. But certainly, like they do in throughout
Azerbaijan
Africa.
Azerbaijan's a good one. They basically have BP and they have dirt roads and
perfect. Yeah. So other places where, you know, obviously South America, Africa, and call that Asia, Middle Asia, or so. The point is that Gaddafi was doing some incredible things to that country, and the only individuals that they had that were willing to rise up against them were all these dual citizen Libyan guys who were basically tied into the CIA, had been working with the CIA. Well, one guy's name was Mehri. He was outed in 2011 in the end of the year when his wife was robbed of 200,000 euros and 500 euro notes. It came out in an Irish newspaper called The Sunday. And when Mehri's name was put out, he was the commander of all of the coalition forces that were put together in Benghazi, who had been paid $800,000. By the CIA to run those forces. And this is a guy that was a 20-year Libyan-Irish national that had been that was also on the Mavi Marmara on behalf of the CIA to keep an eye on that activity. So these are the individuals that were put in place to create an uprising in Benghazi, made 10% of the society, and the number of protesters in these protests were less than 1,000, right? And these were 1,000 people that were protesting, and these 1,000 people, when they weren't getting any attention, they weren't getting enough support, they went to the police stations and they fired up police stations. So imagine a city, you know, around where you live, where there's, you know, most cities are at least about 500,000 and every, you know, medium-sized metropolitan area across the U.S. and elsewhere. So if somebody went to the police stations with 1,000 people and shot up the police stations, all hell would break loose. So Gaddafi was like, hey, wait a second. No, let me get my military involved. And then they get the military involved on the ground there. And then they say, okay, we'll stop attacking your police stations if, this is what they negotiated, if you free these 100 people out of the prison in Benghazi. At the time, there was only about maybe 1,200 people in the prison in Benghazi, right? Mm-hmm. He released the 100, right? And when he released the 100 that night, the 1,000 guys with those 100 went back to the prison and released the other 1,000. So now they had 2,000 maniacs with guns, and they went after a military compound. And when they went after the military compound, they burned the guys in their sleeping quarters, and they basically fired up and stole a bunch of weapons. And how? They had some APVs, they had some APCs, armored personnel carriers. Now they had some gear. He's like, well, you know what? You didn't honor your agreement. I'm coming to bomb you. Oh, he's bombing his own people is what they said in the West. Well, yeah, he's bombing his own people. My God, can you imagine if I took over Patrick Air Force Base here in South Florida with 2,000 guys that were heavily armed that we'd already attacked police stations and broken open the closest prison? Not only would they be bombing me with aircraft, there would be an armada off the coast. I mean, that would be unbelievable. That would never be accepted in the United States. So, no, it was not a popular uprising. This was backed by the intelligence community. It was put together, and then they blew it out of proportion, and they somehow duped the Chinese and the Russians into supporting them on the no-fly zone. And now we have incredible chaos. The after effect, water systems destroyed, oil industries destroyed.
I think they traded off for it, but yeah.
You think? I hope you're wrong. Because it really hurt the Chinese.
I wish I was.
Really hurt the Chinese because I almost feel as though the Chinese are like, oh, crap, really? You know, I don't think that they're doing
it. They had some sweet oil deals, but it's not the oil barons in charge. It's
no.
The seven families there.
Yeah, but I got to tell you, I got to think that there's some people there that are just as disillusioned as there are here. It's not, I mean, and maybe it's not the majority. But the people as a whole, as you know as well as I do, don't even know. I mean, you know, they don't know that, you know, remember the mass exodus of Chinese out of Libya? Those guys were all working for AECOM. That was the $50 billion deal that AECOM had won two years prior. You know, I guess it was 2007 the deal was won, but it started kicking in 2009. But you know, this is, and AECOM, you know, went from being a $3 billion to $4 billion company to an $8 billion company overnight. And then now it's back to $3 or $4 billion. So, you know, the guys at AECOM, they weren't happy about that either. You know, there were some people here that probably saw that and went, I didn't like that either, but I kind of like my security clearance and my job. So, you know, that's where they, you know, people get relegated to their careers. You know, they're like, I care about my career more than I care about the truth. So, and you know, the ends justify the means. We got rid of like that guy Nadim, and I almost called him Shit Hattie. You know,
well, they're like, if it's not me, it'll just be the dupe that replaces me, and it's gonna happen anyway. So I might as well profit also. Like,
there you go.
There's a lot of rationalizations for it.
That's exactly what they're doing. And the guy Shahadi from the Chatham House, I was, you know, before the show, I was thinking about calling him Shit Hattie, but I thought, that's a little adult.
I got ready to say, you know what my nickname for him is?
Shithead. No. Yeah, well, I was thinking Shit Hattie the whole time, and I was like trying not to say it now. So I just kept saying.
I used to call Kordakovsky Dorko because it's such a mouthful.
Kordakovsky.
Just called him Dork. Yeah.
So that whole thing in Libya was, you know, once again fabricated. And then try to get somebody like these, you know, these left wing CNN or First Look Media, you know, The Intercept to, you know, speak legitimately. You know, they even had the gall to put out an article around what's this guy's name that was linking the drugs to the CIA, and he offed himself out in California. He was working for
Gary Webb?
Yes, Gary Webb. There's a movie coming out, and so one of the journalists for...
And that's when he shot himself. He took the gun and shot himself 19 times. No.
Yeah, twice.
He was hit twice in the head, though, so that's different guns. They just come on.
I don't know. I don't know if they're different guys, but my point is that you know the article that came out in First Look Media, which is Pierre Omidyar's George Soros's Greenwald mouthpiece. So he the article that came out by Ryan, I can't remember Ryan's last name off the top of my head, but he had he basically, you know, saying that yes, you know, there was, you know, some indications that the CIA was involved, but it was such a like a softball throw at the CIA. It's like here, catch, you know, I'm just going to do this underhanded, you know, rather than saying, look, this is the tip of the iceberg. Let's really talk about what the details are here. You know, what Webb was talking about, you know, he was probably about 10, 15 years late. You know, there was other people who had brought up the same things. I forget the officer's name out of Los Angeles. There's the raconteur guys with the cocaine cowboys out of...
I think I was thinking of Thompson. That was two different guns. Webb was shot twice, though. Anyway, I'm sorry.
Was shot twice. I don't know if it was two different guns.
No, it wasn't. There was another... I'm thinking of Thompson, I think, but anyway,
but what comes
there's
down
a
to
meme too, where it's like, why I said the 19 times is just a funny thing where there's a cop at a jury stand. It's like, and that's when he picked up the gun and shot himself 19 times. Cause obviously that can't happen.
Right.
Didn't, but, yeah, you see how the cops just unload and all these people and then just get put on paid leave. It's amazing. But,
oh, heck
yeah. Yeah, Doug Valentine gets into the CIA on my show. I let him say it, but I get scared about some talking about them, but I'll do it, I guess. But
well,
that,
I mean,
it's harder to get away with it now with the web and everything.
It is. I mean, you know, people say, what, you got a death wish? And I was like, really? I was like, you guys work for the government, man. I said, is that how bad you think our government is? Are they going to come after me and kill me? And it's like, you know what? Let them. I mean, yeah, what a way to go. You know, I mean, it's just like, I'm done. I'm done, you know, hiding things and, you know, these, you know, and you guys are afraid to even comment on Facebook. Like one guy the other day, he's a total Zio on one of these closed groups, Facebook groups that they don't allow anybody else in unless you were, you know, they know that you were former intelligence. And they go, what are you sharing intelligence information on Facebook? I said, yeah, come and get me. I said, you know, would you like my phone number and address? I said, I call the FBI. They hang up on me. So, you know, they don't want to send any kids over to my house because I'll be like 15 pots of coffee later. I said, no, don't leave yet. They'd be like, please, I got a wife and kids. I want to talk my ear off for like days. So, you know, I mean, there's no doubt, you know, I've
pull
done
up thread six and say, you want to see some real shit? Look at this.
Yeah, you want to see some good stuff? I said, you want to see how your boss is manipulated by outside influences? Would you like to have a conversation on, you know, how you're
you want to see who he's sleeping with? Check this out.
Yeah. Oh, you know, it's funny. Have you seen, what was a girl that was sleeping with Petraeus out of Tampa? She's upset that she was outed by the CIA or outed by the intelligence community because her name was used. So she's suing the government because she was, you know, her name was exposed by the intelligence community. And here's Petraeus, the head of the CIA, using a fake Google account, trying to fool around on the side. I mean, how dumb of a guys do we need in the intelligence community? And a lot of the Air Force cats that I know that are generals now in the intel community, because these guys all stayed in and they, you know, became bigwigs in the industry. These guys are still out, you know, with hookers in Moscow, getting busted, you know, having
all
affairs.
These
on their
Wall Street guys are doing that too. You know, Spitzer was talking about that in the documentary. What's it called? Inside Job, I think it's called. Matt Damon,
yeah,
the narrator, he's talking about. And what I did when I was researching 9/11, I actually went and interviewed people at the White Glove, this strip joint that the Israelis were visiting all the time. I tell you, I mean, it's bad because it's like, well, what's your source? It's like, well, it's this hooker or this pimp or whatever. But still, you kind of can get a general like path. It's like, I don't think you could make that up or know about that at all unless someone told you something. And it's better than nothing. But it's interesting, you know, how they openly are just sleeping with people and they don't really care. It's not like you're only going to get outed if you go against the grain. Then suddenly there's a scandal. Like,
well, these guys have been caught so red-handed that they've been outed in Air Force Times. You know, these, if you go look at generals that have had affairs and have been caught, like, you know, in their 50s, you know, these are guys that, you know, worked in the intelligence community when I was working in the intelligence community. And these guys are still, you know, out, like, just getting plowed and going out and rolling with hookers.
Bush's spiritual advisor was having an affair with a homosexual crystal meth dealer.
Yeah. Hey,
and he bounced back, Ted Haggard.
I got a crystal meth story that freaked me out, but
not right now. We'll save that.
No. This one is by far. So this guy was one of the biggest cookers in the United States since the 80s, right? And I'm gonna protect his name because he lives down the street from me, right?
He just listened that.
Yeah, and listen to this. Listen, I hope he's using the. I don't know if he's undercover with his name or he's on witness protection or not. But this guy's got, he's been convicted, felony convictions. He's got. He was cooking, one of the biggest cookers in the country. I won't say which state, but needless to say, the last time he was busted with possession, kidnapping, and some sort of firearm conviction. So three-count felony conviction, convicted. But his father is a very prominent guy, also one of my neighbors, who, let's just say it's his stepfather. It's not his direct father. It's his mom's second husband. And this guy is so prominent that, let's see, how many years ago was that? 1975. He shook hands in outer space with the Soviets.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and the statue of his father is out in front of the courthouse where he was not even given probation for three counts of felony after cooking and shooting up meth for almost 30 years.
Well, he's not black.
He's got white guy problems. He got out of it all, and he's not even on probation. He is living, and I met him.
Do you want me to leave this in? Do you want me to edit this out?
Yeah, you can say whatever you want. But anyway, my daughter was going through elementary school with his girlfriend's daughter, and that's how I learned that story, because I always go over and meet the parents of anybody my daughter wants to go to their house. And needless to say, my jaw is still on the patio of that guy's house. Because not only did I know his stepdad already, I knew the story about the guy in the state that he was from because he was that notorious. He had trained other people in other states on how to cook. And I was like, wow, that guy's like girlfriend's daughter's going to school with my daughter. And I was like, and his stepdad lives four doors down. I was like, this is kind of like the world is crashing in on me, you know, it's like unbelievable. And the guy four doors down shook hands with the Soviets in space. Alexei, what's his last name? Leonov? Leonov. He shook hands with Alexei Leonov in space. First guy through the door when they hooked up Apollo Soyuz. So that'll be easy for people to figure out. Anybody that has
there's a statue of him. That's the easiest.
There's a statue of him in the state that he's from. Yeah, right in front of the courthouse. So anybody with a brain can figure this stuff out.
But make him figure it out. It's fine.
Yeah,
it's a puzzle.
You need to figure it out. It's a puzzle. It's a matter of fact. And that is, by the way, justice, as we said before
Gold
we came there.
Gold star first person to put the person's name in the comments.
Yeah. Yeah, gold star to anybody that find out. Well, I doubt the stepson's name, but that'd be a huge good. That'd be somebody.
I'll give you two imaginary gold stars if you do that.
Yeah. But the commander of the Apollo Soyuz, they'll get him right away.
Yeah,
that's an easy one. So what's interesting is that
on the podcast is racing over to YouTube to comment. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you can comment on ANC, folks. Just sign in with Facebook or whatever.
Oh, that's funny. So you got people that listen to this live. Nice. Because that's a long podcast. I mean, we've been on almost 2 hours. And I owe a guy a call at 1 o'clock, so I got about 5 minutes left. And, dude, I love talking with you. It's like talking with myself, and I do that way too often.
Let's get the bounce ideas off. I wish I would have recorded that the beginning when I was talking about Burr and the guys that actually shot Kennedy, but I just don't feel like saying it all again. So
there's plenty of time to talk about that again. It's coming up, you know, here in November, and
yeah, I'll be doing it some in LA too. And I don't know, I might just release it in October, because why fight all the people who are going to say stuff in November, right?
Well, the Hollywood guys will be putting out another, you know, more revealing story. You know, after
Bill Hicks has the best joke. Oh, well, he's got a lot of them, but about the sniper's nest in the book, in the book depository building. He says it's a museum now. They've made it a freaking museum, the sixth floor, and it's accurate because you look over by the window and Oswald's not there. Well, Kennedy shot.
Yeah, they would probably.
Well, you know, Johnson had a walkie-talkie with them, and he hit the deck prior to anything going on. He just jumps on the floor with his walkie-talkie, and then there's another guy with a walkie-talkie next to the weirdo with the umbrella. They would just walk off in different directions. Yeah, you should hear my interview with Bill Still.
I like Bill.
Yeah, well, we usually talk about economic stuff, but short little interview about the Kennedy assassination. You'd enjoy that. Bill Still, JFK. I'll just send it to you. Why am I telling you? I can just send it to you.
Yeah, just put it in.
Anyone else that wants that, Bill Still. I have actually put the tag words on my site. So you do a little search, Bill Still, and look for the one that says JFK. And we talk about that whole thing with the umbrella guy and everything.
Interesting. Yeah, there's plenty of stuff. I got to jump for this 1 o'clock that I was going to do. Man, I always like talking with you, and you cut it up, send it out any way that makes sense for you.
All right, man. I'm probably going to shave the first 20 minutes for all JFK stuff and send that to donors, and then put all the Libya stuff for everyone else. And I'll leave this back part about the crystal meth and everything, just because why not?
I'll tell you what, crystal meth, man, that is the, unfortunately, the aspirations of the crazy drug world in the United States. Sad.
I just don't understand why anybody...
Insane.
Bath salts and whatever. Just
oh, my God. Hey, the biggest bath salt manufacturer lives in my town, Melbourne, Florida. Guy was shipping pallets, 500 grand a pallet, to gas stations. Yeah.
Wow.
And he had a lawyer that every time that one of the ingredients was made illegal, he'd dump those ingredients and replace it with something else. Hey, thanks for having me, Ryan. And we got to do some more work on that Thread 6. I'm thinking about getting together with that one guy we were talking about earlier.
And then that other Josh. Thread 5 that I showed you today.
Yes.
Yeah.
Josh. Have a good time Josh would be a good guy to coordinate with.
Josh
and
is
create.
On it. Yep.
Yep. So, all right, man. Okay, always good.
Man, too. All right, man. I'll talk to you later.
Bye-bye. Thank you, sir.
I'd like to remind everybody to see our sponsor, skinspa.com. That's skin-spa.com. There is a banner in the right-hand corner on the website. Also, do continue to donate to the LA trip. Tickets paid for, 9/11 is covered. I'm gathering a little bit extra for the interviews on JFK, as well as the David Cole drinking fund. Just going to grab him a bottle of Jack or something. Who knows how many he'll drink. That's a joke. And I'd also like to say, if you leave a comment below... That is, you don't all have to email me. You can leave comments to the podcast for a guest who you suggest. Please do so. Up next will probably be Pepe Escobar. We're going to be talking about Hong Kong, the sit-ins, and the protests there, and what exactly is going on. And then I have a few guests lined up. We're playing around with time zones, and we will be talking about Iraq and Syria again.